Morning, members. I'm going to call this meeting to the State Government Finance and Election Committee to order for February 12th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, we are holding this meeting remotely. First thing we'll do is Representative Elkins, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, and we'll move their approval, Mr. Chair.
Representative Elkins moves approval of the minutes for February 11th, 2021. 21. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes have been approved. We have three bills on our agenda this morning. The first bill is House File 300. Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair.
Yes?
Mr. Chair. Do we need to take roll?
Oh, that's right. We need to take roll. Thank you. Wait. Friday. Sorry about that. Legislative Assistant Spreck, will you want to take the role?
Yes. Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Here.
Representative Nash?
I'm here.
Representative Bonner? Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Here.
Representative Cleburne?
Sent.
Representative Kosnick?
Here.
Representative Mason? Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members, and for reminding me. Again, we have three bills on our agenda today. We'll start with House File 300. Representative Hewitt, you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's great to be back to this committee. I miss it dearly with my new assignments. I didn't know how much I love state government finance. This bill here was introduced in the last session. It's very personal to me, but it became more popular through last session. We had to work through a few things, but what it does, I'm just give you a little bit of my background. I'm a Gold Star family member. I was 5 years old when my brother was killed in Vietnam. There's two things I remember about that whole scenario very clearly. I answered the door the day that the guy came to do the notification, the day the chaplain came to notify my mother that my brother wasn't coming home. And then I remember the day at the cemetery, which was like 3 weeks later, when a flag was presented on behalf of the president to my parents. And that flag today sits in my office and happened in 1970. And so I remember coming to the Capitol the first time in my first session and looking up at the top and going, wonder what happens with that flag up there. I did some research, and I know that you as legislators or others can request and pay for a flag and have it flown, and you can give it to a constituent. But I wanted to do something else. I really wanted to look at if we could be able to offer that flag to first responders families or to military families. They get one now from the feds, but to military families that have lost a loved one, similar to what my family did in the line of duty. This bill was, I thought this was gonna be a slam dunk, because who wouldn't wanna do this, right? Well, it wasn't. And so we had a real uphill battle with it last year, but we fixed out the bumps. We fixed the bumps thanks to the chair. Thanks to Jim, the former CA, really, really dug in and helped me work through this with administration and with the Senate. So I have a number of testifiers here, and I think it's more important you hear from them right now and how important this would be to their individuals that they represent. Mr. Chair?
With that, we've got three testifiers here. Start with Sean Storman. If you want to identify yourself for the tape, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, I'm Sean Storman. I'm the commander of the Minnesota EMS Honor Guard. So, good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and guests who are online today. On behalf of the Minnesota EMS Honor Guard and as a representative of the EMS providers and the EMS industry in Minnesota. I'm here to indicate that we are in full support of this bill. This bill will provide a great service to the families whose loved ones have died in the line of duty serving everyone in the state of Minnesota. There's many times where after the funeral, people ask, you know, what else are we going to be experiencing or whatever? And this would be a very fitting tribute to their fallen on behalf of the state of Minnesota. So I thank you for your time, and I'll entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Storman. And members, I forgot that Representative Hewitt's no longer on our committee, so I'll move his bill. I'll move House File 300 to the Committee on Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy. With that, the next person on the list of testifiers is Chief Cunningham from the Brooklyn Park Fire Department. Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. It's great seeing you and others, and I appreciate Representative Hewitt for introducing this bill again. I'm the fire chief in the city of Brooklyn Park, but I also have the unique honor of being the president of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. Also in that role, I've since 2011, when the Minnesota Fallen Firefighters Memorial was erected and commissioned at the Capitol grounds, I've served in a number of roles as the honor guard commander, working behind the scenes on a number of logistical items. But, you know, truly the best moment for me that day is honoring those that have given their lives in the line of duty and recognizing their sacrifice. And actually, one of the things that I remember fondly is giving a flag that was flown over our Capitol to a survivor family, and how memorable that experience was and how personal it was to honor, recognize that sacrifice that was made by that person's loved one. It's something that I hold dear to my heart, is recognizing the sacrifices that those have either served in our armed forces overseas or at home on our streets, serving their local communities each and every day. And when we look at the over 200 or 228 firefighters that have died in Minnesota in the line of duty, it's truly their sacrifice that we never want to forget and honor their memory. And this bill certainly codifies what it means for that sacrifice. And being able to present those two flags to the families from personal experience, when I looked in the eyes of widow and could see the reaction and the emotion and just how raw it was for them, but how special it was that the state honored the sacrifice of their loved one. So on behalf of the state chiefs and everyone in the fire service, we certainly support this bill and appreciate it being brought forward to recognize those that have made that ultimate sacrifice in the line of duty. So thank you, Chair, and I can certainly answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. And then the last person I have on my list is Chris Gevin.
Gevin.
I said that right?
Yes, sir.
And if you introduce yourself for the recording and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Chris Gibbon. I'm the Director of Facilities Management for the Department of Administration. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The Department of Administration Facilities Management Division operates and maintains the Capitol Complex. As part of that effort, we raise, lower, and care for the flags here to ensure proper protocol. We also fly flags for individuals and groups upon request, provided that they supply the flag for us to fly. We fully support the concept of the Capitol Flag Program. We'd be honored to fly the United States and Minnesota flags for those who have fallen in the line of duty. We understand the significance and poignancy that flying our national and state flags over the Capitol building in remembrance of someone carries. This concludes my testimony. As a retired Air Force officer, I also fully understand and support.
Thank you, sir. We have a, there's a completed fiscal note. Ms. Roberts, you want to explain the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. If you, the costs that are showing on the fiscal note are from the Department of Administration, just a little over $1,000. There's discussion on page 5 of the fiscal note. And the $1,200 that is shown as being unable to be absorbed is for postage and then a small fraction of the staff time. And I think maybe Mr. Given can confirm this. The reason it's being shown as being unable to be absorbed is because these costs would be occurring in the plant management internal service fund. And so there's not really a way to assess those out in the fees to other agencies, but he may want to comment on that.
Mr. Given.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Helen, you're absolutely right. We are an internal service fund, so everything we do has to be costed somewhere. We're not allocated general funds, and so it would be appropriate to have a fund source for this particular program. I mentioned in the testimony that we do fly flags now, but all the flags that we fly are provided to us. With the implementation of the program, there will be flags that may be additional flags that family members may want. And so therefore, the state would have to provide that. And also the time with tracking and logging. Typically now people bring their flag in, give it to us. One of our grounds members brings it up to the flagpole, flies it, brings it back. We call them, they come and get the flag. With the program now, we'll be packaging the flags and mailing them, and that's something we typically don't do. We do receive mail requests today, and it's a pretty small percentage of the volume of the flags that we fly. But with those mailings, the people are they send the flag to us, and they send a return self-addressed postage already paid for envelope. And so there really is no cost to the state at this time for that particular element of what we do today. So that's what's so different about the Capital Flag Program, where the state will be providing that free flag, additional free flag, and the postage and everything that it takes to track it and make sure it gets to where it needs to go. And so hence, those are the additional costs. In the fiscal note you saw, there are some costs we are absorbing. We already fly flags, so we don't see that as a big issue where, hey, there's a couple of flags the grounds person has to take up and fly that are for the flag program. We're not concerned about that. It's just this additional element that we do not do.
Thank you, sir. I have questions. Representative Nash, you want to go first or do you want?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hewitt, thanks for doing this bill. And Chief Cunningham can talk about this as well. In my district, not too many years ago, we had a fire captain die in the line of duty, and he was there at the funeral, and it was a huge funeral, and it was a very sad day. I think I fully support this bill, but would ask a couple of questions and then may take a different direction. But Representative Hewitt, if you would, why do both the implementation of the bill and a pilot program at the same time in your bill?
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, thank you for your support. That was when the bill came back, I was kind of confused. I do support the pilot program to make sure, because we don't really know the exact number. That was something that was the end in this, is that we're looking at what the total cost is on this. And also, we have a number of groups that have contacted me that actually want to pay for this program, that want to start donating to it. And we felt that we had that unknown. No one can really figure out the real number on this, because we don't know how many are out there. And the other thing about the mailing cost, I would bet that most of these, when they're requested by the representative or senator or constitutional officer, will go back to that individual and they will bring it to the family. And so I think that, you know, there's things here that maybe I got to clean up yet a little bit, but I had that same question and they explained it to me that it's the study has to be done and report back to us so we actually can get a budget fix on this and see how many people are actually going to donate and things like that, Representative Nash.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hewitt, I will tell you that from my perspective, if I were to take advantage of this, I'd just pay for it myself. And I wonder, Mr. Chair, and I would appreciate if Mr. Gehring could help us with this. I'm of the perspective that we should just do this, and why can't we just simply amend out the pilot program? I don't know if that is absolutely necessary. I think this is just one of those things that we do. You know, as a military dad, don't ever want to get that knock on the door. But I would hope that if that were to be the case, that my state would just figure out how to make it so that it was not something that had to be onerous on the family. Similarly, the members of the legislature or the constitutional officers, I'm sure, can take care of the cost of the flag and delivery. I appreciate Mr. Givens' input on the mechanics of flying the flag, and there are hard costs that are associated with this. But, for someone as stingy as myself, and Chair Nelson, I'm sure is going to crack a wry smile about the fact that I'm stingy, I don't care on this one. If we're going to do this, let's just do it. If we could, Mr. Gehring could maybe add some insight into the ease of amending that out here in committee. I would be open to that, or let's just amend it out on the floor. I don't know any reason to do a pilot program for something that is quite as obviously a good idea as this. And Representative Hewitt, the only thing that I have that I'd be bummed out about is that I didn't get to sign on to your bill when you were dropping jackets, so I'll add on to this afterwards. So if, Mr. Chair, you could have Mr. Gehring give us kind of an overview of the mechanics of amending the pilot program out without making things too clunky, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, I actually might defer to Jeff Diebel, who's on the call, who's the lead staffer for this bill. I do think it's probably a fairly simple amendment that Representative Nash is suggesting, but I'll defer to Jeff.
Mr. Diebel.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. This is Jeff Diebel from House Research. It would be a very simple amendment to delete that section of the bill. I think that we may need to have input from Helen Roberts as to how that affects the financing, and just make sure that there's money there. So as long as there's appropriation to cover the costs, which, as the testifiers have mentioned, are difficult to nail down, I think that'll be the tricky part of amending that section out.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, the bill currently does not have an appropriation in it to provide any funding, even the $1,000. So that might be something that would have to be considered. The bill is going on to another committee, so it could be something we could look at the next stop.
Representative Nash, I think we leave that in there for now, because if I remember last year, that was one of the big unknowns, and one of the big pushbacks from the administration on this was they didn't know how many people that have in the past have come forward would want one, that have passed away. They didn't know the cost of it, so they wanted the study so they could have an idea on it. But we can look at that in the next committee if that's the case. Are you okay with that, Representative Nash?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to make this a little less clunky. And I'll tell you, Representative Hewitt, if you can't find the $1,000, give me a call. I'll write you a check. That's how I think this is important. So let's move on. Yep. But I think Mr. Givens waving at us.
Mr. Givens.
Yes. Representative Nash, thank you for seeing. I don't know how to I don't use Zoom very often, so I don't know how to raise my hand. But just for the record, Department of Administration did not ask for this pilot program. Admittedly, we don't know what the pent-up demand is out there for flags, because this goes all the way back. So you could have somebody that had deceased. There's no timeline on this. You could have somebody that was deceased in the 50s in the line of duty, and a daughter or son would like to have it flown. And so, therefore, that's why we didn't have a good hard estimate. But we did not ask for the study. If the money is there and available, we'll certainly be happy to start running those flags up the poles.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Representative New, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hewitt. I think I'm just assuming that this will have broad support. I think we are all thrilled to do this, to honor those killed in the line of duty. I just have a couple of questions. I'm wondering, in the language, and I apologize with Zoom, I have to flip between screens here. The verification of eligibility, is there a reason that we are having all of these different organizations figure out their own procedure for verification? It seems like that should be something that's easily streamlined, and instead we're going to have the Senate and the House and each of the constitutional officers, everyone is creating their own procedure for verification. It seems like there should be something streamlined there, or something that would be easily streamlined. What do you have in mind for how eligibility will be verified?
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Representative Newbrin. It's the first time I had to say that. So
Newbrindley, that's right.
Congratulations, Newbrindley.
Thank you.
Yes, this was actually a sticking point last year with the Senate about the verification, because some of the verification is going to be, it's going to be cantankerous, because the Department of Veterans Affairs said, well, we don't have all that. What we did do and what we agreed to do here is leave it on the senator, the representative, the constitutional officer, to make the request after they verified it themselves. And you yourself know that if something happens in North Branch, or something that happened back a few years ago, you as a rep know your area the best. And that verification, because we're not doing paid out benefits here, would actually work for this program much better to have you be the verifier of that. And by just talking to the family and doing what you want to do, if you want to get a flag for them, and that you know it was a line of duty death, you make the request. And we just simplified it, is all we did, because it's to go through the process of like an insurance verification or to pay out a big benefit would have been very cumbersome and take days to do. And many times, as the honor guard can say, they would almost like to have this flag available for the ceremony. And so I think that sped it up, and that was Senator Kiffmeyer really wanted to look at that to say, let's just simplify this. And that's kind of where it went that way to us. Before, there was a big laid out procedure, to almost the same procedure they used to pay out the benefit, and that would have taken days. So I simplified it. We all agreed on it, and that's why it looks more cumbersome, but it's not. It's going to be Representative, it's going to be you going to just basically make the request, get it done, and based on what you know about your community.
Newbrindley, Representative Newbrindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. I appreciate that explanation. I might suggest that rather than instructing via this language that the House and Senate and constitutional officers must adopt procedures for the administration of an eligibility, perhaps it is just that the House, the Senate, and the constitutional officer must verify eligibility. Because I wonder if by instructing everyone to adopt procedures, we don't still run into that same problem, in that now we're still going to end up with a cumbersome set of eligibility verification procedures. But I do appreciate that point. And to the previous point, I actually had the same question as Representative Nash about the pilot program. I wonder if it would make more sense. I certainly appreciate a reporting requirement to indicate what has been done with the program over the year, you know, funds received, how many requests were made, et cetera. But I wonder if a reporting requirement would be a more streamlined way to do that, as opposed to having a program and a pilot program. That seems a little clunky. So thank you.
Representative Hewitt, it sounds like you've got a couple things that you can look at and work with your Senate authors to as this moves forward to the Labor and Veterans Affairs Committee. Representative Hewitt, and yeah, first let's say any other questions. I don't see any. Second that. Representative Bonner has her hand up.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this forward. As you know, I did sign on as a co-author to this bill. I'm highly in favor of it, and I guess I would echo the sentiments, ironically, of Representative Nash and Representative New, that, you know, if we can find a way to just do it, I think it's a good idea. It has real merit, and there's a great deal of support for it. In terms of the fund to pay for it, the one thing that I would think about or consider, and, you know, I mentioned this to you personally, I would be more than happy to make a contribution into this fund, and I suspect there are many others, but I don't know if there's a mechanism to do that. But certainly, I think it's a worthy cause, and I think we could find the money for sure. So thank you for bringing it forward. I do appreciate the idea of making it simple and clean, but having a way for the administration to get some idea of a ballpark for what it would cost. But certainly, it is a worthy cause. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. And again, I'll second here, make sure no other hands go up. If not, Representative Hewitt, do you want to wrap up, and then we'll move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, Representative Nash, Representative Newbrien. I'll get that name right sooner or later. I really, and Representative Bonner, I really appreciate your willingness to get this done this year, and I would love to make the bill much more simpler. As far as procedures go, we had an intern work on that. We actually do have a procedure that's being worked out with the Sergeant of Arms offices in both houses that talk to the member that say this is how it's done. We felt they were the best education source for that. So things are being worked on. We will continue work in progress, but I'm hoping to get it done this session. Thank you for your support. Mr. Chair, we'll work on the fixes. I'll work with the representatives as we move to the next committee, hopefully.
Thank you, sir. With that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 300 be referred to the Committee on Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs. Representative or Assistant Spreck, if you want to take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman? Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
And Representative Greenman?
Aye.
That's 13 ayes. The motion prevails.
Thank you. The motion prevails. You're on your way, Representative Hewitt, and see you later. Next bill on our committee or on our calendar is House File 152, Representative Jordan. And Representative Jordan, this is going to the General Register. So if you want to make the motion on your bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I like Representative Hewitt.
Oh, that's right.
Serving on this committee, but this year, this biennium, I'm not on this committee anymore.
That's right. I got my years mixed up. It's I don't know why my brain is so scattered this morning. Anyway, I'll move House File 152 to be moved to the General Register. Representative Jordan, you're going to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, members of the committee. I'm pleased to present House File 152 to designate the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Fire Hall and Museum as the State Fire Museum. The Fire Hall and Museum is a truly remarkable gem in my community that celebrates and honors firefighters' rich history statewide. There are artifacts from various stages of history and vintage fire trucks that you can ride in from the Metro, the Mankato area, and Fergus Falls. You can see pictures of brave individuals who have saved the lives of Minnesotans for generations and learn about the work of being a first responder today and what has changed and what remains the same from 100 years ago. Not only does this museum serve as an important site to talk about Minnesota's history, the Fire Hall Museum is also vital for teaching about fire safety and education. Many programs talk about how to best prevent home fires and accidents. They mainly help educate many students, but I know that I have also picked up a safety tip or two myself. I hope members will support this bill, not just because of its meaning for Minnesota's history, but also because the Firefighters Hall Museum is a truly special place in my Northeast Minneapolis community. I've attended neighborhood meetings to hear about what's going on in the community, attended graduation parties and weddings and art events during our annual Art World Festival in May, where, yes, I've had the opportunity to ride in one of the antique fire trucks. Our firefighters have given Minnesotans so much in the past year. In my community and yours, firefighters have braved not only just literal fires, but a deadly virus as they keep us safe when we're sick, hurt, and need help. In the past year, I've personally witnessed our Minneapolis firefighters put out a fire that consumed almost an entire block in freezing sleet, prevent overdoses, respond to civil unrest in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, and secure a downed wire in the alley right behind my home. Honoring this work and telling their story is a meaningful action this committee can take this morning. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Tom Brace to speak more about the museum's vision, and I also have Niall Zickland here with me to answer any technical questions related to the bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Mr. Brace, if you want to identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Brace. By way of a brief background, I was the Washington State Fire Marshal for 10 years, the Minnesota State Fire Marshal for 16, managed the State Fire Chiefs Association, and I happened to be the chair of the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Firefighters Hall and Museum. What we're asking for today simply is a designation as the State Fire Museum. We're not asking for any money. Money is always a challenge with a museum, as many of you know. But what we're saying is if you make sure that we are designated as the State Fire Museum, then we think that, like legacy grant monies and other fundraising efforts, will be improved by the credibility of being the State Fire Museum. It was started by a trust. It was Bill and Bonnie Daniels had no children. They enjoyed the stock market and they endowed the museum, and they wanted the museum to do two things. One, be a fire museum, and two, have a place for retired firefighters and others to go and talk about experiences that they had in the past. And we believe we have honored that tradition. Once again, your designation, we think, makes us more competitive in the public and private communities as we search for money to keep the museum open. As you know, most museums never make it entirely on a gate receipts, 30 or 40%. So we are continually looking for funding resources. We really appreciate the fact that your committee, sir, and members took the time to consider our needs. I would stand ready for any comments or questions that anybody might have. I would close with this. The city of Falcon Heights, a community that I happen to live in, just decided not to continue its fire department. 1949 was when it started. Now that department has ceased to exist. We would offer, an example, the city of Falcon Heights, the opportunity to place some of their fire memorabilia, other key records and information in a safe, approved, state-of-the-art storage ability. So we think there's a genuine need across the state of Minnesota to have a place that can be properly stored, accessed virtually for people to see these treasures. There's a wonderful history of the fire service in Minnesota, and we need to capture and maintain it. Thank you again.
And I see on my list that Mr. Zickman is here to answer questions. Representative Nash, you got the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The question that I had of Representative Jordan at the very beginning of this was, does the official designation as the state fire museum eventually put the state, I guess for lack of a better term, on the hook for funding any deficiencies that might come up? And was wondering if nonpartisan staff might be able to answer that question. I've been given an answer, but I wanted to make 100% sure that that's indeed the case, because I am supportive of the idea of having a fire museum. Have spoken to several fire chiefs. I know that Senator Howe is also the Senate author, so that while he is a senator, which concerns me, he is a former firefighter, and that gives me some confidence. But just wanted to ask if we could get an answer from nonpartisan staff on whether or not being designated as the fire museum puts the state in line to be responsible for some of the funding.
Mr. Gehring. You're muted, sir.
Sorry about that. Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I don't believe that it does. And Ms. Roberts is on as well and can confirm that.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, I would agree.
Mr. Zickman, I see you unmuted yourself. Did you want to take a stab at that question also?
No, sir.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Nonpartisan staff, right? It's not the intent to give money. It's the intent to help us raise money, you know, and preserve history.
Thank you, sir. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is something I support. I support our fire service, and with the knowledge that it's not something that would be necessarily making the state beholden to fund it, I am supportive of it, and will be adding myself to this bill as well. I had initially been asked to be on the bill by Representative Jordan. Just wanted to make sure that this one question was indeed answered. So thank you so much.
And members, that's one of the us meeting remotely. That's one of the things that we don't have the opportunity to do, is to walk our bills around in the state office building and get signatures on them. So that, as in the, unlike in the past when there's been multiple signatures on bills as they've been introduced, there may only be one name on there because we don't see each other like we used to do. But there are ways to do that. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did just want to point out, and thank you, Representative Nash, for your help with this bill and your support. It was actually good to talk to you. It is more, as Chair Nelson pointed out, it's much more difficult to do. I did want to point out that this does, even with the remote say, have bipartisan authors in both the House and the Senate, and it has authors from across the state of Minnesota in different political parties. So this is a bill that really is a statewide bill. It's a bill that is supported by Democrats and Republicans, and I think that's, it's really great that we can come together to honor our firefighters and their history in this way.
Representative Mason, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this would be for Mr. Brace. He had made a comment about enabling them to be more competitive. Are there any other fire engine museums in the state that anybody knows of?
Mr. Brace.
Mr. Representative, we would be the only statewide fire museum. There are several museums in communities that deal with a single event, like the Hinckley Fire. Around the Hinckley Fire, you would have a display. But given the size and the scope of our museum, over 12,000 square feet, there is not a similar fire museum in the state. Other events, yes, but not statewide, not through the history of distinguished history of firefighting.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Zickman, did you have something more to add? They put you on my list.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll just share addressing some of the concerns. We will be and are eligible for the legacy money, and that's significant, and that's, as you know, constitutional money. And one of the visions, as we gather more information from across the state, and we've reached out to departments up on the Iron Range, down in the southwest in the central area, and as we're talking to the chiefs, you were just getting a wonderful response, but one of the first grants we've already submitted is getting into what's called virtual access. And it's part of the Alliance of Small Minnesota Fire Museums. And for a modest $300 a year, we're literally able to put just volumes of digital data onto that server that's protected backup farm. It's all part of the Minnesota Historical Society network. And so that's where not only do we get to start preserving, but right now, if you want to know the history of Falcon Heights Fire, you have to go to Falcon Heights Fire or Bowabic. You have to go there. Now, everybody everywhere in the world through internet access. But in addition to that, we'll be submitting legacy grants to make interpretive displays, and our goal will be to make them portable kiosks. And so think of the Oregon deployment that just occurred here a month and a half ago, where you had 20 firefighters from across Minnesota, you know, setting aside 2 weeks of their life, endangering their lives, traveling, you know, across the country to the West Coast. And so we'll be writing a grant to do the oral histories, to take a lot of the imagery and create those portable displays, and then you'll percolate them out throughout the state of Minnesota, so all Minnesotans, you can see and capture and learn about that history. So that's part of the vision.
Thank you, sir. Representative Jordan, you want to do a quick wrap-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Fire Museum and its importance to the state of Minnesota. I'm so thrilled that I get to represent so many wonderful firefighters and retirees in this building, and I'm glad that we can share this real gem in our community with everyone in the state. So I hope you will support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And with that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 152 be moved to the General Register. And the committee assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Bonner? Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
With 12 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails.
Congratulations, Representative Jordan. You're on your way. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you,
members. The next bill, thanks everyone for the testifiers, but the next bill we have is Representative Katiza Watoon, House File 832, and I'll move that House File 832 be referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy. Katiza Watoon, please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for having me this morning. House File 832 is a very simple bill. Only one change, one word added to statute, simply making the name of lottery winners here in the state of Minnesota private, as along with their phone number and street address. So in today's day and age, with technology the way that it is, it's certainly much easier to find a lot of information about anyone, and oftentimes more information than they may want shared. So this came about, you know, a couple weeks ago. We had a really large nationwide jackpot, and I actually got a couple questions from constituents about whether or not, you know, if they go in a lottery pool, do all the winners have to report their name? Somebody didn't even know if they could claim anonymity in Minnesota, and so I started looking into it a little bit, and Mr. Prock with the Minnesota Lottery, he was actually in a Commerce hearing, and lo and behold, Senator Kiffmeyer was introducing a bill in the Senate that same week about this issue. So she and I got to talking after those questions from constituents, and I've decided to carry it here in the House. So one of the things that happens when this information is public is that, you know, lottery winners have been robbed, some of them have been killed. There's a lot of harms that can come to people if your information is public like that. And in fact, the Today Show you search like lottery winners, one of the articles that comes up and the very first thing that they tell you to do is to buy your ticket in a state that doesn't require you to come forward. So there are a number of states that don't allow that allow people to not release their name, and North Dakota is one of those. So I don't know if some of our friends over on the west side of the state just pop over across the border to buy their ticket, but I think that that's certainly a really, really important part of people being able to keep their name and information private so that they don't have to deal with any of these things. The second tip on that article is to not tell anyone, though it's kind of hard to do if your name is out there in public. I'm happy to stand for questions, but again, this bill is pretty simple, and just wanted to make sure that all Minnesotans have access to the privacy that they desire.
And members, I have Mr. Brock from the lottery here on my list. I'll please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Adam Prock. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Lottery. Thank you for the opportunity to briefly discuss House File 832. Winner safety and security is particularly important to the Minnesota Lottery. We pride ourselves on treating our winners with respect, and that includes protecting their privacy. Winners are not required to have their photo taken, share their stories, or participate in news conferences if they choose not to. The lottery is continually taking proactive steps to help address privacy concerns, including transitioning to using only winners' first names where possible when it comes to social media, local media statements, and website content. The only information the lottery is required to disclose as a matter of public record is the winner's name, city of residence, prize amount, and where the ticket was purchased. The lottery works closely with all winners on a case-by-case basis to ensure their needs are met, including winners who choose to maintain a very low profile. This transparency is crucial to the integrity and continued success of the Minnesota Lottery. When the names of winners are public record, the lottery can prove that real people from every corner of the state are winning, which increases player confidence that the lottery is random and fair, that players are not associated with the lottery in any way, and that most of the money spent on lottery tickets is returned as prizes. When any government entity disperses hundreds of millions of dollars a year, transparency around who is receiving that money is an appropriate measure to ensure confidence in the organization. Additionally, to help protect the integrity of the lottery and our games, we employ a highly qualified security team that conducts internal reviews to vet winners. However, our reviewers can occasionally miss player connections that the members of the public might catch. And winner transparency increases the likelihood that wrongdoers who attempt to commit lottery fraud will be caught. There have been instances around the country where people have attempted to commit fraud and were caught, at least in part, because winners' names were public. For example, a recent case involving a lottery insider who rigged drawings around the Midwest and arranged for accomplices to claim the winnings. If the names of his brother and his best friend, who claimed some of the prizes, had not been publicly known, the insider may not have been caught, and he certainly would not have pled guilty or faced justice for those crimes. The balance between lottery integrity and player security is something that we consider every day at the Minnesota Lottery. Both are vital to our mission as a state agency. We appreciate and share your commitment to safety, security, and integrity of the Minnesota Lottery and its players, and we will continue to work with the author and committee members to identify and address any concerns. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today on the impact of House File 832, and I'm happy to take any questions.
With that, members, any questions? I don't see any hands raised at this second, but I'll wait a couple minutes here. And I see nobody jumping to put their hands up. Representative Katiza Watoon, do you have any final closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard today. I think that the privacy and safety and security of Minnesotans is paramount. I appreciate the insight from Mr. Prock and his staff over at the Minnesota Lottery. And if there are questions going forward as we make our way through the process, I'd be happy to consider those suggestions and insight to make the bill even better. Thanks for your support.
Thank you. And with that, I see no hands being raised. I'll renew my motion that House File 832 be referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy. The legislative system will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleburne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam? Aye. Representative Quam?
Aye.
With 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you. Representative Kateza Watun, you're on your way. With that, members, that's the end of our agenda for today. I see Representative Elkins got his purple filter turned off.
It just fixed itself.
That just fixed itself. Okay. Members, our next meeting is Tuesday, February 16th. And as I mistakenly said that today's meeting, but that meeting will have Minnesota Management and Budget discuss their the request from the governor's budget. And with that, members, we are adjourned.